Open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 7. Let's stand together. Proverbs 7, verse 1. My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law is the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. I'll speak to you tonight on the flattery of folly. Now, just to review last week's thoughts, we had three main points, and that was from chapter 6, that it's foolish to follow the character of a wicked person. And then it's also foolish to do things that are hated by God. Life's hard enough without provoking God as well. And then it's foolish to destroy your own soul. In chapter 6 involved the evil woman, who hunts for the precious life, and how foolish it is to destroy your own soul in the sin of adultery. Now, chapter 7 focuses again on this familiar person in Proverbs, the strange woman. And you might ask, why are we talking about her again? We've already seen her in chapter 4, chapter 5, and chapter 6. Well, we're talking about her again because she's in chapter 7. And God includes her several times throughout this passage, or throughout the book of Proverbs, and she's very prominent. She may be the most prominent character in all of Proverbs. And I admit that until this study that I simply marked it down, that the strange woman is a real problem for men. And men aren't always very smart and need to be reminded of her danger. And there's certainly truth in that. That's the surface level of what these passages mean in Proverbs. And there's nothing wrong with the surface level. There's lots of truth there. And certainly on a very practical level, you need to just be faithful to your wife and avoid the strange woman, the prostitute, the evil woman, the woman that hunts for the precious life, that wants what your wife has. You need to avoid that. And certainly that's certainly a very practical truth for us. That's the surface meaning of Proverbs 5, 6, and 7, the danger of a real woman or real person really messing your life up. That's one of the fastest ways to do so. But when I was studying chapter 5, I saw something for the first time. I've never heard anyone else explain this, although I don't claim that it's original. I might have heard it somewhere and just forgot about it. But what I saw here was a deeper meaning. The surface meaning and then a deeper meaning. Because the theme of Proverbs is wisdom and folly. Wisdom and folly. And these themes are represented by different characters in the book of Proverbs. For example, way back in chapter 1, we discussed how the instruction of a father and mother, how that is against the invitation of perverts, peers, and predators. Remember that? I think that was one of the most important lessons in the series. And so in that, not only is there the very practical thing that you need to listen to your parents, because that'll help you stay out of the wrong crowd, but you can also say that the parents, with their instruction and their laws, represent wisdom, and the invitation of the predators, the peers, and the perverts, that represents folly. And so wisdom versus folly illustrated in the parents and then in the wrong crowd. And this imagery is really quite powerful for children. I've been taking an online course through Hillsdale College. It's a free course. Anyone can take it. I'm not worried about getting credit. I just like to learn things. You'll have to pardon me if I'm having trouble talking. I bit my inside of my mouth. So I feel like I'm talking around. No one else noticed it. Also, my eyes are twitching. I'm not winking at anybody. Okay, so just want that to be clear as well. When I first got into church, our song leader, he had a nervous tic, and he would wink with his eye a lot. And I'm sitting there across the, you know, he's two tables over at a fellowship, and he's winking at me. I'm like, why is he winking at me? Found out he winks at everybody. A nervous titch in his... Anyway, I've been taking an online course at Hillsdale College, and I finished one on Introduction to Western Philosophy. It was very interesting. A lot of it was over my head, but I still enjoyed it. And then I'm taking one now on children's literature, which you might not think is interesting, but it's actually a very interesting course. And as I said, anyone can take it. And by the way, there's a lot of good resources online for your kids and for you. PragerU is one that I... Not 100%, but I mean... enough for me to stand in my pulpit and recommend that there's some good videos that you can watch. And Hillsdale College has some interesting conservative-leaning right-wing as opposed to what you normally get at a college. Anyway, that was a long way to get around to saying this, that the first lesson was about the moral imagination. The moral imagination. And how the great literature of the past for children aimed at that moral imagination. It wasn't just a moral story, but it was a story that taught a moral ideal through the characters in the story. And so the kids are seeing these heroes and what they're doing, what they go through, what they endure. And it inspires a heroic attitude towards life, as opposed to what we have today, where we have a bunch of anti-heroes, where the quote-unquote good guys are always doing bad things, and because it's different, you know. And so you have these anti-heroes that are doing the wrong things and getting away with it. And that's not heroic. That's anti-hero. That's, when I was a kid, anti-hero was the villain. But that really is the nihilistic attitude of our time, the cynical nihilistic attitude of our time. No heroes. If we find a hero, we have to destroy him. We have to tear him down. You can't have a hero like George Washington or a hero like Abraham Lincoln or a hero like Theodore Roosevelt. We have to tear those down. And what do we put in their place? A bunch of anti-heroes that don't inspire anything. And Proverbs uses this imagery as well. It tells us stories. And here in chapter 7, you have a story. The wise father is telling his son. He said, I was standing by my window and looked out and I saw this young man. Let me tell you the story about him. So this imagery is quite powerful. Now, the imagery of wisdom and folly in chapters 5, 6, and 7, and the deeper meaning, obviously, again, the surface is there. But you have the strange woman representing folly and the good wife representing wisdom from back in chapter 5. So the strange woman, folly, represents immediate gratification, no responsibilities, you know, just have fun, enjoy the pleasure, and don't worry about any consequences. Whereas the good wife represents a commitment and a delayed gratification and denying yourself and doing the right things and being faithful to her and being satisfied with her. All that represents wisdom as opposed to the quick and easy route of folly. Okay. So that continues on here into chapter number 7. Now, in your handout, letter B there says, folly takes many forms. And let me just give you chapter 5, 6, and 7. You have the strange woman mentioned in each of these passages. And yet there's something slightly different about each. All right, in chapter 5, she's seductive. But the young man is encouraged to marry and settle down and be satisfied with his wife. So here's a young man facing decisions. On one side is the easy, seductive route of the strange woman. On the other side is settling down, taking responsibility, being a man, and being a good man. And so to choose between the two. In chapter 6, however, she's the evil woman who's hunting for the man already in a relationship. That's your first blank. She's hunting for the man already in a relationship. She wants the precious life. She wants what that woman has. So she's going to get it, but in an evil way. And this represents how, here you have someone who has already made a decision to live wise. They're in church. They're trying to do the right things. They're married. They have relationships. They have kids. And yet folly is always coming along trying to seduce you away from the path of wisdom. Always trying to seduce you away from the path of wisdom. And it's very easy to step off the right path and say yes to the strange woman while she's seeking the precious life. All right? And then in chapter 7, oh, by the way, David illustrates this. David was a young man. You read about him in 1 Samuel. He behaved himself wisely in all his ways. What a wise young man David was. And then in midlife, in his early 50s, then he falls with Bathsheba. So here's a man that had walked wisely for so long, and yet here comes a strange woman. She wasn't really seeking him out, but she also wasn't bathing in her bathroom, which she should have been either. But anyhow, Satan used that temptation to derail a man who, up to this point, had lived with great wisdom, you see. And so there's an illustration there for us to learn that temptation does not end because you have chosen the path of wisdom. All right, in chapter 7, she's a flatterer. As we'll see, this young man is different because he's seeking her out. He wants folly. He doesn't want wisdom. He's destitute of wisdom. He's looking for folly, and he finds her. And this young man has no wife. He has no relationship to wisdom at all. That's your next blank. In chapter 7, she embraces a young man with no relationship to wisdom at all. So the strange woman represents folly and sin. In my Sunday school class this last Sunday, we were in Hebrews 12, and we discussed the sin which doth so easily beset us. And I've heard different explanations for that, and some of them are true. I don't know if they necessarily fit this, but they're still true statements, that the sin that doth so easily beset us is your habitual sin and your particular weakness. Maybe if you used to be an alcoholic, now when you get stressed out, you want to go drink. I don't ever want to drink. I never drank. It has no appeal to me. It stinks. It makes you stupid. I don't want to smoke a cigarette. I don't want to smoke a joint. None of that has one ounce of appeal to me because I never got into it, never got hooked on it. So when I get stressed, I might eat that cheesecake. But I'm not going to drink, and I'm not going to smoke, and I'm not going to dope, and I'm not going to do those sorts of things because it has no appeal to me. So that's one thing that the besetting sin may mean. But what I believe it means is this. The word beset means in front, on both sides, behind you. It's all around you. When you are beset, you are besieged. You are surrounded by the enemy. And I believe that as we're going through the Christian life and running our race and keeping our eyes on Jesus, no matter how long you have been saved or how sanctified you think that you are, sin is always besetting us. It's always easy to sin. Just step off. It's there. I've been saved 30 years. I am not standing here 30 years later saying, man, I'm finally free from the presence of sin. It's nowhere near me. What a wonderful life. No, 30 years later, you know what? Sin's on this side, sin's on that side, sin's in front of me, sin's behind me. And I have to keep guard on myself because it's always easy to sin. Sin is always available. Sin is always present. Sin is always besetting you. Not only is it in the world in which you live, but it is inside of you yourself. It's your emotions, your mind, your heart, your feelings, all of that is all marked by sin. It's all marked by depravity. And so I'm trying to live the Christian life, but here's the strange woman. Here's the sin. Here's the sin nature. Here's the temptation. And it's always around me. It's always easier to sin than it is to say no and to keep running your race for Christ. So you wonder why, man, that person was been in church for so long. How could they possibly end up in sin? Because sin's always present. Now, obviously, if you put yourself in certain places, you're really putting yourself in more danger than in other places, obviously. But don't think that you live above sin or that you're past sin or you're too smart to sin or you know too much to sin, because sin is always present. David, looking out the window, looking at something you shouldn't look at, you know she's married, you know she's married to Uriah, and you're going to do it. Sin is always present. David didn't stay home to commit adultery. David just stayed home and then he committed adultery because sin is always present. That's why Paul said that in me that is in my flesh dwelleth no good thing. Sin is present. So, she's always there. And I don't mean to say she as in women are the problem. It's just the illustration that God gives. We understand. I keep mentioning that because I don't want to look like a misogynist and end up on YouTube. You know. So, I mean, here's wisdom. And by the way, how can that be when I'm saying on one side that folly is the strange woman, but on the other side, wisdom is the good wife. The good woman represents wisdom. Now, just because you're married or you have married wisdom doesn't mean that you can't fall for the flattery of folly later. When you're young, it's easy to be foolish. Young people, you will not lack opportunities to be foolish when you're young. When you're older and you should have some wisdom, you can still play the fool, and some do. When you're old and you should know better, you can still be a fool, and there's no fool like an old fool. So, all right, our first main point, number one, the simpleton, verse 6. For at the window of my house, I looked through my casement and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths, a young man void of understanding, All right, so here's the simpleton. Solomon is telling a story. I looked out, I saw a bunch of young people. They were simple, and this one young person kind of broke away and went off towards this in this other direction. And so he discerned that this young man was void of understanding. Now, we've said earlier that young people are not naturally wise anyway. But this young adult he's reached young adulthood and has absolutely no wisdom. When you are void of understanding, you have nothing. A void is empty. So he has no understanding. If he has no understanding, he has no wisdom. And so he doesn't understand some of the things we've emphasized in this series. He doesn't understand God and doesn't fear God. If you understand God, you fear God. If you don't fear God, you don't understand God. You do not know God. I don't care how long you've been in church. If you don't fear Him and fear the consequences of chastisement, then you do not know God as well as you think you do. Then he doesn't understand human nature. He doesn't even understand his own nature. He doesn't understand consequences. He doesn't value delayed gratification. Again, you can have one marshmallow now or three in 15 minutes. Delayed gratification. That you can actually get more and better if you wait than if you indulge right now. And he doesn't think about the future. Therefore, he is going to flirt with folly. He's going to flirt with folly. Now, I believe that there's many things wrong with our country today. And anytime someone says, I'll tell you what's wrong with our country, and they say one thing, I said, that's it? Just one thing? There are a lot of things wrong with our country right now. It's almost depressing. If you let yourself get depressed, you certainly have no shortage of reasons to. I don't let myself get depressed about it, but it's not encouraging. And I'll tell you what one thing among many, many problems is, we've had a couple of generations grow up without wisdom or understanding. Without real wisdom or understanding. They have been indoctrinated but not educated. Indoctrinated but not educated. They lack wisdom. They do not know God. They do not understand God. Their families did not take them to church. If they went to church at all, it wasn't a good church. And sometimes those who grew up in a good church, they despise what they grew up under. There's no fear of God. So many of them are empty souls. They are lost. They're easily led about by the devil and the world. They're easily manipulated by adults who have an agenda. But you can't tell them that, because if you try to, they just shout you out and cancel you. Cancel you. And so here we have a young man. He's simple. He's void of understanding. He is not married to wisdom. He has no relationship to wisdom whatsoever. And he doesn't understand these things that we've discussed. So he flirts with folly. Verse number 8 says, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. So he went to the wrong place at the wrong time. You know where you should go at night? Church on Wednesday night and Sunday night, and home. Nothing good. I think it was Nick Saban. Some athletic coach said, nothing good happens at 3 a.m. He's telling his players, nothing good happens at 3 a.m. And so here he's out. He's in the twilight. He's in the dark. He's not going home. He's out looking for trouble. If you look for trouble, you'll find it. Amen. And so he's looking for trouble, and trouble is going to find him. And now, here's your next set of blanks. Here is a man with no restraining character meeting a woman with no restraining morals. She has no morals holding her back. He has no character restraining him. That's not a good combination. So he went to where she was. Now, folly is always available, but there are some places where she is quite at home. That's number 3 there, where she is quite at home. It's good for us as parents to pay attention to where our kids are. It's good for them to be at church. It's good for them to be at youth camp. It's good for them to be at youth activities. It's good for them to be in services. It's good for them to be with their family. There are a lot of places our kids could go where folly is at home. I don't want my kids where folly feels comfortable. I want folly to feel very uncomfortable in church. Foolishness ought to be uncomfortable in church. And so some places are much more likely, they're more conducive to doing bad things. In some places, wisdom is at home. I hope wisdom's at home at your home. Wisdom's at home at church. Wisdom's at home where there's a good education. Other places, folly is at home. In today's society, I would say that folly is very much at home in the entertainment industry, in the music industry, in the public school system, and in the university system. I think that in those places, folly has herself enthroned. You listen to these actors, and it's all right to get into current events. We need to understand our society around us. I'm not interested in what any actor has anything to say about anything. Okay, just because you have a certain face, most actors are short with big heads. So you have a certain face, and you can deliver lines and memorize a lot of things. If you're not John Wayne, I don't care what you think about things. And so we listen to these actors because they make us feel a certain way and they entertain us. That doesn't mean that they know anything about life. That doesn't mean that they're not fools right down to the core of their being. Even if they're conservative, I don't care what they think about anything. I don't care what athletes think. I don't care what musicians think about things. What gives them any extra insight into anything than you have? And much of the time, these great figures, these famous people, are on the wrong side of every issue, persuading gullible young people to follow them in their foolishness. You know, I'm not against watching a television show or a movie if it's a decent movie, but I tell you something, don't let these people become your kids' heroes. None of them are my heroes. You know, I may watch something and I drive my family crazy because we want to watch something, and I'm pulling up Wikipedia to see who this person is, and then I can't watch it. Can't you just watch the show, pretend who he's pretending to be, and not worry about what a leftist nutcase he is? You know, sometimes ignorance is bliss. You know, back in the old days, you didn't know where these actors stood on stuff. They just made their money and made their movies, and nowadays they gotta be social agitators, don't they? The power of music and movies and TV shows to indoctrinate us and persuade people to a foolish point of view or philosophy or way of life ought to be beyond dispute. Of course it has an effect. You can't grow up saturated in this society and it not have an effect on your life. Mainstream is foolish. If you're going to be wise, you're going to be on the outside of these things. The public school system, you know, though I'm sure there are plenty good individual school teachers, but just in general, it's more and more dominated by leftist values. And leftist means everything contrary to what you believe as a Christian. You know, it's amazing that soon there's going to be the 1619 Project taught in our public schools, teaching that America was not founded on 4th of July, 1776, but in 1619 when the first African slave was brought to the British colonies in North America. They will be taught that as history among a bunch of other junk that seeks to destroy our love for this nation. I really believe that one of the best things we ever did for our family was we decided to boycott the public school system when before our children ever set foot in one. One of the wisest decisions we ever made, one of the toughest decisions we ever made, but one that has helped us more than anything else. You can't send your kids off to Caesar and be surprised when they come back acting like Romans. Universities and colleges, there is no place on in America so isolated from the real world and so steeped in ungodliness and leftist values than the public university. All you got to do is watch YouTube. Watch how they shout. Anyone that comes in with any differing opinion, they shout them down. They cancel them out. They can't even tolerate free speech on these campuses. There was a time you went to a liberal university and everyone had their say. Everyone could say what they thought and everyone can listen. Now, if you're one bit conservative, they want to cancel you. You can't speak on their campus. You can't teach on their campus. And God forbid that you be a born-again Christian because they'll tell you you'll be one of the most hated people on campus. It's no joke today. And, you know, I think sometimes people think, well, school's just like it was back when I was a kid or whatever, and it's not. Things are moving much faster than any of us can really even keep tabs on it when you have another job to take care of. Look how fast things have changed in the last 20 years. Look how fast things have changed. How can you and I, how can anyone who has a regular job and busy and has, how can anyone possibly keep tabs on all the things that are constantly changing and producing generation after generation of young people that have no wisdom, no understanding of God, have wrong values, and want to destroy the nation that would give them the greatest possible life that they could possibly enjoy, and they don't even appreciate it? I'm a little angry this year. This year's been eye-opening to me. I'm disappointed in so much of my country. Disappointed in so many Christians and how we have responded to things. And I tell you something, just the fact that this election is even in dispute with so many millions voting for basically a socialist agenda, it just saddens me to my heart. And I genuinely fear where our nation's going. And you know what the hope is? It's young people like this that we pull out of that system and train up with some wisdom and some understanding. To teach them to have a relationship with wisdom and to avoid the strange woman. So they can have good lives and good families and be good members of their community. And maybe one day we'll see our nation turn back around again. When we stop producing a bunch of mindless robots and start producing some people that have some virtue and some strength and some courage and some willingness to do the wise thing and do the right thing instead of just always pleasing their flesh and being led about by false promises. The simpleton. No one here needs to be a simpleton. Verses 1 through 4 and verses 1 through 5 tell us we have God's Word. We can bind it upon our fingers and write it upon our heart. Know this book and know what it teaches and recognize the strange woman when she comes by. Recognize folly when she shows her face and say no. So, number 2, we see the stranger. The stranger, verse 10. Behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot. It's worth noting that she dresses like a harlot, but she's not a harlot. She just dresses like one, but for the same reason. She's advertising herself. She's actually a married woman. You see that later on when she talks about the goodman is gone for the night. The goodman means the head of the house, the husband. Why would any wife want to dress like a harlot? Why would any single girl want to dress like a harlot? If it's not for sale, why are you advertising? I'm not getting into attire right now, but that's one of the great verses to use. There was a time when a father said, "You're not dressing like that. You're not dressing like a harlot." And so there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot. She has a seductive appearance, but a deceitful nature. She's subtle of heart. Folly is designed to appeal to your fallen nature. She looks good. She's appealing. You know, if sin showed itself as it is, you wouldn't be attracted to it. No one would be stupid enough to fall for sin if it showed itself as it is. If sin wasn't fun, no one would ever do it. If sin had no pleasure, it would have no appeal. Okay, so it has a seductive appearance. But it's a deceptive nature. It's not what it appears to be. Notice that she's not good wife material. Verse 11, she is loud and stubborn. I'm not saying she never gets married. I'm just saying she's not good wife material. She's loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now she is without. Now in the streets and lieth in wait at every corner. In other words, she's not only loud and she's stubborn and she's hard to live with and hard to deal with, but she's not faithful and can't be trusted. She's always sneaking out doing something. She's the opposite of Proverbs 31. And so here's the thing. You're going to marry one or the other. You're going to marry wisdom or you're going to marry folly. Who do you think is going to make you happier? I think I'll choose wisdom. I'd rather have the good wife than the loud, stubborn, unfaithful, untrustworthy wife. So, verse 13. So she caught him and kissed him. And with an impudent face, that's brazen, impudent face, said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Now, peace offering was something you presented to the Lord, and the Lord got part, and the priest got part, and you got part. So she said, I've already been to the house of God. I presented my offerings, gave my tithes, did my service for this week. Now I've got my peace, my steak set aside for myself. Let's go in and eat it, and we'll enjoy ourselves. And she has no real fear of God. She may have a religious side, but she's not pious. She's not faithful. are then flattery. Verse 15, therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. Now, she didn't know who's coming along. I mean, come on. She'd have taken any guy that came by, but she's going to make him feel like he's really special. Then she promises instant gratification. Verse 16, I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with men of Egypt. I perfume my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us soul ourselves with loves. Boy, what a pleasant picture to a young guy looking for trouble. And she seems to say, you know, we deserve this. Let's solace ourselves. I mean, we deserve to have some fun. Yeah, I deserve to indulge myself. A lot of Christians, they feel they deserve to indulge their sin. I've served long enough. I'm usually good. I deserve every once in a while just to indulge my sin. I can justify myself. I'm just going to enjoy this for a while. I'll get right about it later. I'm going to enjoy this lust, this pleasure, this bitterness, this resentment, this whatever. I'll just hang on to it a while. I deserve this. It comforts me to feel like a martyr, like I'm righteous, feel like I'm justified, whatever. And that's the wrong attitude. Let us take our fill of love. We deserve this. Let's solace ourselves. I'm stressed. I need a break. All that sort of thing. The instant gratification. Instead of being strong and toughing things out, let's just give in to our lust and our heart's desire. And then, but what she offers belongs to somebody else. Verses 19 and 20. For the goodman is not at home. He's gone a long journey. So the goodman means husband or head of household. He's gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him. Will come home at the day appointed. So there's no danger. There's not going to be any consequences. We can just have a good time. He won't be back for a week. You know, no danger, no consequences. Folly always says, you'll get away with it. There's no danger. There'll be no consequences. So the simpleton, the stranger, number three, the slaughter. The slaughter. Verse 21. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield, and with the flattering of her lips, she forced him. I don't think she had to try very hard to force him. What do you think? He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter. You know how they send an ox to the slaughter? They lead it along, and the ox doesn't know what's going on. The ox thinks, oh, another day out. This is a new place. Cool. Got to ride in the truck. Go in. Oh, a little door. Well, they push him into this little door. Okay. And they go into this chute. And he's kind of wandering around. They don't have any idea what's going on. And the chute will lead them around into the slaughterhouse. The next thing you know, he's either getting shot in the head or having his throat slit. But when he first goes in, he has no idea where he's going. He's an ox led to the slaughter. And this simpleton doesn't either. Then he says, let's see, verse number 23, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. So a snare is a trap. So here's a trap on the ground. It's got seed and grass thrown around there. And the bird says, oh, free food. And he comes running up for his freebies, you know. And as soon as he steps his foot in, the snare closes and wraps around his leg. And that, now he's dangling, trying to flap, but he can't get away. That's the simpleton. When he runs into the stranger. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know that he's headed for slaughter. The simpleton has no idea what he's getting himself into. People have no idea where sin leads or where foolishness leads. If they did, they wouldn't go. If I was the ox and knew that they were going to kill me in there, I'd fight every step of the way. The ox doesn't know, so he just walks right into it. The simpleton doesn't know what he's getting himself into. Then, fourthly, the sermon. The sermon. Verse 24. Hearken unto me now, therefore. Do you get that, kids? Now. Not later. I'll repent at leisure. How about now, before you make these stupid decisions? Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children. Boy, it would be good if kids would say, you know what? I'm just going to grow up, and I'm going to be pure, and I'm going to be a decent person, and I'm not going to fool around with anybody, and I'm going to get married and have a good family, and I'm just going to be a good guy, a good lady, and I'm not even going to walk down that pathway. That'd be a blessing, wouldn't it? Well, hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children. Attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. So don't start down the paths of folly. Now, of course, on the surface level, has a bad woman been the end of many good men? Yes. Or has sexual sin been the end of many a good man? Yes. Or woman? Yes. David and Bathsheba, Samson, Solomon, go on and on and on. And so why do you want to go down that pathway? But why do you want to follow folly anyway? Consider the end. So the simpleton, the stranger, the sermon. See, God has something better. The cure for being a simpleton is the knowledge and wisdom found in the Bible. And so in chapter 8 and part of chapter 9, you have wisdom portrayed as a woman calling out, you know, offering something better than the foolishness of folly and the hurt and the death and the slaughter of folly. Here's something better. He says, she says, "Oh, unto you, O men, I call. I've hewed out my seven pillars. I've prepared a feast. All that I have for you, turn your back on folly and come and follow wisdom."